This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
And you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio of VSporto Channel. I'm Jason Staples. And we've got a big show today talking about a reevaluation of the Wake Forest game. We're going to do segment one on offense, segment two on defense. So let's go ahead and get started. The main thing is that I wanted to wait a little bit on this show to have a chance to reevaluate what I was actually seeing in this Wake Forest game. The game was sort of disjointed in a lot of ways, and it was certainly not the prettiest game that I've ever watched. But I wasn't quite sure what I was seeing on that first watch through. I mean, things looked ugly. The score, I think, was closer than the game actually was. I never felt like the outcome was in doubt. But I wanted to go back and take a look at the replay to basically determine what I actually was seeing. You know, it's one of those things where sometimes you hear from Jimbo Fisher after the game, you know, we got to go look at the film to see what actually happened. And that was kind of the way that I felt after this game. I mean, sometimes I'll watch something and I'm pretty confident of what I being able to evaluate right afterwards. And this was not one of those as much. I had to go back and watch more carefully what was actually happening to see whether. To see where the issues were and where the issues were not. And as it turns out, I actually, the funny thing is that there are a lot of fans out there right now. You know, I'm seeing it on Twitter and on different message boards and so on. There are a lot of fans out there who are basically dumping any of their optimism for the season after this win, you know, after an 8-point win at Wake Forest. You know, that's not the most impressive way to start conference play. Actually, I guess they started conference play against Boston College, but 7 points on the road there. So those two, seven offensive points on the road, those two performances back to back, you know, there's some people who are stepping a little closer to the ledge in terms of the 2015 season. After this game, though, I actually came away after that second watch and looking at things a little more clearly, I came away feeling like things actually had really taken a step forward in a lot of regards, particularly on offense. And that's where, you know, I think that we really saw significant improvement on the offensive side of the ball in this game. It wasn't as obvious for a couple of reasons, but I thought there was significant improvement, particularly from Everett Golson. And I mentioned this on Twitter shortly after that second watch that I went back and really felt like I'd seen significant improvement from Everett Golson. And Jimbo Fisher confirmed that in his Monday press conference. He talked about how Golson had really taken several steps forward and that he had been more comfortable in what they were asking him to do. And you know, that's not, by the way, a ton of stuff. I mean, they're not running the Jameis Winston or even E.J. Manuel offense with Everett Golson. They're not asking a bunch from him. This is not a super complicated thing they've got going right now. But, you know, it's tough to start as a, you know, after 3 weeks in a system, even as a graduate transfer. I mean, look at Oregon. They got a simple system, you know, reportedly. I mean, their system is, no system in college is super simple, not in modern football. But look at Oregon. I mean, they have a graduate transfer who has lit the world on fire in the past, coming out of a very similar offense to what Oregon runs anyway. And Vernon Adams did not tear it up right away, and they've had some issues out there. Now, he also broke a finger in the last couple weeks. You know, you've seen some of the fallout from that. But, you know, it's not as easy to plug and play anywhere with a graduate transfer. And, I mean, obviously, Russell Wilson set the bar pretty high for that when he transferred to Wisconsin. But fact is, Russell Wilson is kind of a rare breed there. I mean, look at the success he's having in the NFL. And regardless of what you think about Everett Golson, he's not Russell Wilson. He's not going to be Russell Wilson in the NFL. You know, Wilson was able to transfer in to Wisconsin, and he had a little bit of extra time anyway because of when he transferred in. He was able to transfer into Wisconsin and and win that job and really be an upgrade there. But, you know, things were, he had a veteran offense around him, and he also is Russell Wilson. But outside of that, I mean, what graduate transfer quarterback can you think of that has stepped right in day one and run any system with tremendous success without some hiccups and without some of those issues? I mean, Clint Trickett even had issues and some a decent learning curve when he went up to West Virginia. You remember he had 2 years there. In the first year, you know, he was in and out. Now, the second year, he was very, very good. But it takes a while in college offenses, not just to get not just to understand what's going on, but it's about more than understanding things. It's about getting to the point where you don't have to think as much, and getting to where you, beyond that, getting to where you have a comfort level with the guys around you to know where they're going to be and when, and have a comfort level with your wide receivers to be able to put things in stride and to know where they're going to be and have that trust built up. That takes a while for any graduate transfer. And it's a rare, rare guy who can overcome that. I mean, Jacob Coker, he didn't walk right into Alabama and start like people expected. And listen, Jake Coker, if he was at Florida State right now, this would be a top four, top five team, maybe a playoff favorite, not just to make the playoff, but maybe to win it. Because in the Fisher offense that he had learned for the 3 years before he transferred, he was comfortable and ready to roll. This would have been a very easy transition with Jake Coker. But it took him a while when he went to Alabama, and then he had to learn a new system, learn new teammates, gain respect. All of that stuff takes a while. And it wasn't until, again, this Georgia game that you really started to see that come. Mostly because this year he's had to adjust to a whole new set of wide receivers. I think he would have had similar success to what Bama did last year, and I think they would have maybe won the national title with him at quarterback at the end of the year last year, because it would have taken him some time. But by the end of the year with Amari and those receivers, you put Coker out there, and they're gonna light the scoreboard up. But this year, he's got a group of all new wide receivers, and it takes quite a bit to change that. Takes quite a bit to get used to that, and now with what we just saw Bama do to Georgia, I think they're a frightening team moving forward. If Coker and those wide receivers start to hit a rhythm, they're going to be very, very tough to beat. Now, I'm interested to see what happens against Texas A&M in a couple of weeks. I think it's a tall order for Alabama to beat Texas A&M. Interestingly, I think A&M's a matchup for them that's a little bit more difficult, but I think they'll roll through most of the rest of that schedule. I think LSU is going to have a similar problem beating Bama compared to what they'll have a similar problem as what Georgia did, because they're, again, that's what Bama's built to stop. So it's going to be interesting to see moving forward. But either way, getting back, Golson, after the 2 weeks of the bye, where they were able to go back to fundamentals and prepping for Wake Forest, those extra 2 weeks, that made a huge difference, I think. He really showed some differences. I mean, number one is it looked to me like he got his run checks right. And that's one of the biggest things in Fisher's offense, where, you know, if he just gets his run checks right with the running backs that Florida State has, then that makes this offense really a different animal. Because, again, you get the ball to Dalvin Cook in favorable situations where you have half a gap or where you have the angles to make the blocks, that can make a pretty big difference. And we saw that on the 94-yard run, which, by the way, is I think why he later on went out with that hamstring, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Golson was, I think he was right with his run checks, and I thought he was quicker and more confident in terms of how he read the field in the passing game. He missed a couple. There's one in particular in the second half where looked like they had a sail concept on, where you have the outside wide receiver running downfield and the inside wide receiver running a deep out or corner route underneath that. And it looked to me like he missed the corner or the out there. He decided to try to throw deep to Bobo Wilson. And that was a bit of a force to try throwing deep there. And if he'd have just taken the deep out or the corner there, that might have scored. And it was just a misread. And there are a few of those, but he made more confident decisions, and he was quicker and more decisive when he made those decisions. Now, the wide receivers didn't help him out. They had four or five drops early on, especially. I mean, they came out right away and tried to get him comfortable on that first drive, and they went three and out because you had an immediate drop from Bobo Wilson. You had one where he actually threw too wide. I mean, he threw about 9 feet out off of his location, and Rudolph couldn't hang on to that. So, but that drop from Bobo was huge. You can't let your quarterback get comfortable when the wide receivers are dropping the football. But either way, I mean, I felt like he came out and looked much more comfortable, and generally looked like he understood what they were trying to do. And that's something that early on in the year, particularly as we talked about last week, early in the year, there were times, first half against USF most notably, where it wasn't clear he understood what they were going for. It was more clear against Wake Forest that he understood the concepts that they were going for and was putting the football more or less where it needed to go. There's still some issues. He's still not great. But with this kind of incremental improvement, he could be good enough by the time he needs to be. Now, he's going to have to take another step forward against a better team, against Miami this week. But this Everett Golson, the Golson that we saw against Wake Forest, can beat Miami. It also helps that the offensive line was better. The offensive line showed some improvement. Ryan Hofeld at center, I'd express doubt when I was told that he was the best guy. But it looked like he was against Wake Forest. He's not an All-American. He's not an All-ACC performer. But he was competent. The snaps were generally better. There were a couple that were a little high. But the snap gets back there actually a little quicker. And generally more on target. And the biggest difference was how the offensive line improved, handling stunts, twists, blitzes, things like that. You could see that the calls and the overall communication up front was better. And that's very much generally on the center. And I thought Hofeld did a much better job in that. This offensive line pass protected much better against Wake Forest than they had. And that's not just because Wake Forest's defensive line is not very good. They actually have a couple decent players there. But the other thing is you're looking at what they're doing rather than the outcome, and the what was better than it has been. They were in the proper positions, and there were a couple cases where you could see the communication on the inside where Hofeld would help out a guard in one place and then pass off and pick up a blitz. Or a guard would do that. And those communications to be able to close off those gaps against double A blitzes, things like that, that makes a pretty big difference for an offense. And that's a big difference on the offensive line, where they'd had some busts, particularly against Boston College, but also against USF. They'd had some busts that resulted from not really communicating well, not passing guys off well to pick up another guy that was coming on a twist or a blitz or a stunt or something like that. So I thought that was the biggest difference that I saw in the offensive line, particularly on that second watch. And I thought they also combo blocked just a little bit better on the inside as well. And again, that's a communication and comfort issue. Some of it has to do with experience, where they were able to help each other out and then, pass off and potentially get to that second level. Now, Hofeld, don't get me wrong, he still lacks a little bit of sand in the seat. He's still light in the butt. And got pushed back a little bit on reach blocks a couple times when they had the right call on to make that difficult. But overall, he was an improvement at center over what we've seen. And I think that also had some impact on Everett Golson's performance. Because, again, he was not pressured from the inside the same way that he had been at a few different points. And for a shorter guy, that matters. And the other thing is, he was able to catch the snap while keeping his eyes upfield much more consistently in this game. And that helps also. So the comfort level that we saw, the additional comfort level that we saw from Golson in this game, I think was also partly the result of some improvement on that offensive line, where you know, again, I think Hofeld was the primary reason for that. And I also thought Kelly at right tackle played well. I think he's an upgrade at this point at right tackle. Now, Rubel down the line, a year from now or 2 years from now, may be a really, really good right tackle. But I think right now, Kelly's a better option at right tackle. And you could see that. Now, there are some concerns that came out of this game offensively. Most notably, Dalvin Cook. I'm not sure this Florida State team beats this Miami team without Dalvin Cook. This Florida State team doesn't have a reliable big play guy, a reliable playmaker, and not just a big play guy, but a guy who you can consistently go to for consistent gains. They don't have another guy right now other than Dalvin Cook. Vickers is a nice back, and he had some good runs after Dalvin Cook went out, but you could see that the drop-off is gigantic. You're going from a guy who's a first-round type talent at running back to a guy who might, you know, he might be on an NFL roster down the line, but he's not that. Dalvin's special, and you can see that. And unfortunately, Dalvin goes out, and it would be the perfect opportunity for Mario Pender, but this is characteristic of Mario Pender's career so far. Mario Pender's in the hospital. So unfortunately, right now, Florida State, their two best playmakers coming into the year, Dalvin Cook and Mario Pender, may be out for the Florida game. And even if Dalvin Cook plays against Miami, he's not going to be as explosive with that hamstring. Because, listen, I've had a lot of hamstring injuries over my life, over my career. And once you pull it a little bit, once you have that strain, it's something that you can't quite, it nags at you for a while. For weeks. So even if, you know, 1 week later, and yes, he's going to be getting the best treatment and everything for the next week. Even with all that, I have my skepticism about I'm skeptical about how efficient, how effective he can be against Miami after that. So that's a big concern moving forward. But I think this offense is in a better place around Dalvin Cook and around that tailback position than it has been up to this point. And interestingly, I looked up after the game. I was surprised to find out that Florida State's offense in 2015 is averaging the same yards per play that it was in 2014, 6.39 yards per play, which first of all is a pretty good number. Generally over 6 is very good. Over 7 is elite. Which Florida State was at 7.0 in 2012 and at like 7.4 or something like that in 2013. It was insane. 7.67 in 2013, which is off the charts good. But 6.39 yards per play is actually pretty good. And I was surprised that this year's offense on a per play basis has been about as efficient as last year's offense. Despite no Jameis Winston, despite some of those changes, which tells you that there's been some progress made on that offensive side. And yes, schedule plays into it a little bit. But they've played the number one defense in the country at this point already in Boston College. So that 6.39 includes that. So one quarter of that number came against the best defense in the country statistically. So And certainly, I would say a top 5 to 7 defense in the country, not statistically. I think Boston College has a really, really good defense. So 6.39 yards per play, same as 2014 so far. Most of, you know, obviously a lot of that's because of Dalvin Cook's home runs, but you know that's true in any offense. Big plays is where you get your yards per play average out. But that surprised me a little bit. We'll see how that goes moving forward. You'd think that might go up. Particularly as they get more wide receivers involved. And this is a situation on the next podcast, we'll address this a little bit more in terms of some of the younger guys. But, you know, when you get George Campbell and Pig Harrison and some of these other guys on the field and give some of the bigger play guys more opportunities, you're going to see that number go up because you're going to see more big plays out of the passing game. Right now, the passing game is like third to last or second to last in explosive pass plays in the country. And that's going to change as you get some of those bigger, more explosive guys out there. But at this point, you know, Rudolph has had Pig Harrison has had a knee brace on the last couple weeks. You know, he's had some knee issues that have held him out. George Campbell missed a bunch of time during camp, which set him back, and he's had some setbacks as well in practice as he's been learning what he needs to do. You know, some of the other guys, you look at another young guy that might have played otherwise is Auden Tate, and he had a hand injury. You know, you go down the list, there's a number of reasons why some of these guys aren't on the field yet, but as they do get on the field, I think you're going to see some differences. So, in any case, I think the offense really made some strides in this game. I think there's a lot to be encouraged about if you're a Florida State fan about what this offense did against Wake Forest. Definitely some improvement. All right, so let's go ahead and transition then to our second segment. And again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, VSporto Channel. I'm Jason Staples. I'm going to talk about the defense here. And the defense against Wake Forest was not as good as the offense. The offense, again, going back, the offense only had the ball 9 times. That's not enough drives to get a whole lot done. You generally expect 13 or so. They ran 51 plays in this game. 51 plays. You usually expect in the 70s. You know, your tempo teams are running in the mid-80s. You know, Bama against Ole Miss ran over 100. So if you think about it, this Florida State team against Wake Forest ran 51 plays. That's less than half of the total play output that Alabama had against Ole Miss. Well, no wonder they only scored 24 points. You're not going to do much on 51 plays. That's maybe a little, that's over half, but not much. That's about 3/4 of what you might expect in a game. So they played basically a 3/4 offensive game. And a big reason for that was the defense just didn't get Wake Forest off the field. As good a job as the defense had done in the first 3 weeks of getting three and outs, winning third down, winning first and second down to get to third down scenarios that they could win, they did not do any of that against Wake Forest. Wake Forest was able to win first and second down pretty consistently with some soft or with some short stuff, the nickel and dime type passes and so on, to not get behind the chains, not get off schedule, and then convert a third down and continue to march down the field. And they gave up no plays, no big plays at all. But they gave up way too much in terms of just letting Wake Forest stay on the field. I thought they played too soft in the secondary at cornerback. They clearly came into the game, you know, sort of playing vanilla, didn't want to give anything up downfield. But geez, I mean, you got Jalen Ramsey and Marquez White at corner. Let him press a little bit and just, you know, pressure those receivers and get that offense off the field. I don't quite understand the approach that they took in this game, to be honest, defensively. I just don't get it. I don't know why. Against Wake Forest, with a quarterback who's in his second start, you don't just get more aggressive in the secondary. Why you don't decide to try to knock those receivers off their routes and force them to beat you over the top? You really are going to expect those guys to beat Jalen Ramsey over the top? Just let him press. Let him dominate that guy like he's done all year and keep from being able to do as much in that short passing game. Now, it's possible. It's possible, given, again, I should always remind myself of what I was told early this year, that Jimbo is a big-picture plan guy. And, you know, some of the stuff that they were going to do offensively and so on this year, they weren't going to make sacrifices to win this year that would put them behind for the master plan for 2016 and 2017. Because those are the money years. Those are the years where they should compete for a title. They want to win this year. They're going to do everything they can within the confines of that big picture plan, of that long term plan, to win the games this year. But they're not going to sacrifice development this year in order to do it. And I wonder actually whether or not some of the stuff that they did against Wake Forest was you know, sometimes again with the offense, you'll see that they'll get up a little bit and then, you know, they'll have a passing scrimmage or something like that. Effectively, it's what they did against Texas State, right? They got up in the first half, second half turned into a passing scrimmage to try to get Everett Golson a little bit more live reps, get him a little bit more comfortable in that environment. Well, I wonder to what degree there was some of that going on against Wake Forest, to where they were working on some specific things on defense that they needed to have for packages that they want to run against certain teams in the future. That, I think, is a real possibility. That said, I still don't really like it a lot. And I also think that the defense just in general didn't play as well as they had the first three games. The effort level was not as high. I think you could see the energy level on defense was not as high. There were fewer hats in the picture when the tackles were being made, fewer hats to the football. I mean, you want to see a lot of guys, six, seven guys around the football when a guy's being tackled, and you just didn't see that in this game as much. I didn't think the defensive tackles played as well. I mean, they dominated the line of scrimmage against Boston College and to a lesser extent against South Florida, and they didn't dominate in this game. They were okay. They were good. They didn't get pushed around a bunch, but they didn't dominate the interior like they did against Boston College. And I thought the other thing is that, you know, we can't overlook this, that, you know, Nate Andrews and Terrence Smith both went out early with injuries. And I thought there was a huge drop off from those guys after they went out, particularly Terrence Smith. I mean, Smith is a rare kind of athlete at that linebacker position with his length and his ability to move laterally. And he's kind of like an extra safety on the field just with linebacker size. And with his experience in the system, he's been all over the field so far. He got rolled up on. They pulled him out with that ankle, and it didn't look good. And his replacements, Northrop, we know what we have in Northrop. He struggles a little bit more in coverage, particularly against that short stuff. He doesn't have the range that Smith does. He's serviceable between the tackles, but you know he didn't have great range before the knee injury, and he certainly doesn't now. And Lorenzo Phillips played quite a bit, particularly in the second half, and clearly has the physical tools, but he looked lost. He looked lost out there when he was playing for Terrence Smith. Whereas Smith is a guy who is, you know, he's been in the system a while, he knows where he's going, and is able to attack downhill at this point. You know, he's made plays in the backfield. He's able to read routes and get underneath them and do things in the passing game. Phillips was taking false steps. He was hitting his gaps. He was fitting his gaps at the wrong shoulder in certain cases. He was not able to attack moving forward because he was a beat late. He just looked lost, which is understandable. Again, you've got a JUCO transfer in his early phases of learning the defense. And, you know, he's getting there, and this week will have been really good for him to see himself on tape and to be able to recognize certain things better. But boy, there was a big drop off from Smith. And that does not bode well moving forward. You know, the sooner Smith is able to get back healthy, the better. And the same thing with Andrews. Andrews is one of the most important players on this defense. And, you know, some of you have heard me criticize Andrews' play at safety at times, particularly last year. But don't get me wrong, Andrews is one of the best and most important players on this defense. I just don't think he has a tremendous amount of range when he's playing back in that center field role or when he's asked to do certain coverage things at the safety position. But what he does allow is a lot of flexibility because of his coverage ability, because of his ability to play in the box, and because of his ability to rush the passer to do a lot of different things. In that defense, he's critical to the dime defense in particular, because you can put him in that money role in place of the Will linebacker, and he's outstanding. He's got tremendous instincts, as good instincts as anyone in the country at getting up underneath routes and this sort of thing, and reading pattern reading and getting up, making big plays, ball hawking against what the quarterback is trying to go for. He does as good a job of that as anyone. And without him, that feature isn't there. And the real concern is that Andrews and Terrence Smith are the primary underneath coverage guys in the dime package. And both of them are hurt right now. I mean, Andrews is out against Miami. It's a really good thing that it's not a major injury. I mean, we're talking about a bone bruise, which usually takes, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks to kind of get back on the field and that sort of thing. But a lot of it's pain tolerance, and, you know, surely he'll be on he'll get a cortisone shot and so on when it's time. But it's going to take some time for him to get back. But he's not going to be there against Miami. Probably he's not going to be there against Louisville. Probably isn't going to be there against Georgia Tech. So, you know, that's a pretty big loss. And who knows how long it's going to take for Terrence Smith. I mean, his ankle is going to take a while. I mean, I thought it didn't look very good when he got rolled up. But those are your primary backers, your primary underneath coverage guys and also run support guys in the dime defense. And that's a really, really big deal. And you could see that after those guys went out, Wake Forest was able to do more underneath because of the fact that the best guys in Florida State's, the guys that they've depended on underneath, weren't there. Guys that know how to pattern read and know how to be in the right spots, they weren't there. That's a concern, really big concern against Miami, who can put some playmakers underneath and run those shallow crosses and things like that. And if you don't have Andrews and Smith, that's a concern. And we even saw Keelan Smith in there in the dime package in the second half. And you know, again, that's a huge drop-off from a Nate Andrews. That said, I do think that the defensive staff is continuing to use situational personnel packages better. I love what they're doing with Derwin James coming on the field as a pass rusher, using his explosiveness off the edge. Be interesting to see how that role develops now that he's kind of stepping in to replace some of what Nate Andrews' role is. I'm interested to see how they use Derwin James, but I feel like they're using personnel this year better than they did last year. They're orienting scheme to what guys are able to do generally better than what they did last year. Be interesting to see how that interfaces with Lorenzo Featherston being back this week and what he's able to offer off the edge as a pass rusher. They're going to need that against Brad Kaya and this Miami offense. It's going to score points. But either way, I think that there were some warts that were shown from this defense against Wake Forest. And the biggest concern is the health of the defense coming out. I mean, the two of the guys that they really couldn't lose are guys that went down. But, I mean, honestly, in this position right now, the defense is not in a position where they have a lot of guys they could lose. They're not an especially deep defense, particularly in that back seven. There's a lot of youth there in the back seven where any one of those guys goes down, and it's going to be a drop-off right now. So, you know, next man up, and we'll see what happens against Miami. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And, of course, make sure to catch our next podcast. It's going to come tomorrow, and it's going to be my Rant of the Week podcast. And then after that, we'll have one more podcast this week previewing the Miami game. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.